Omaha Bellevue LLC versus Wanda Montgomery.
May it please the court, my name is Karen Weaver and I represent the appellant defendant Brouhaha, to whom we will refer as Munch Bar, as was done throughout the case.
And rebuttal time? You want to save?
I would like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal.
All right, you'll have 6 minutes initially. Proceed.
Thank you. In this case, the two major groupings of issues are whether Tariah Smith Milliken qualifies as a child within the meaning of RCW 420.020, and also the admissibility of character evidence or lifestyle evidence, as it's been called. Then there are some sub-issues under those having to do with statutory interpretation, full faith and credit, and under character evidence, the sub-issue was the judge's, what we feel was a reversal of position on the jury instruction regarding wrongful death damages to include guidance of the child, whereas that had not been included in the written order on motion in limine.
On the statutory beneficiary issue, if I read the appellant's brief correctly, you point out that there is a Arizona decision that says that the defense here could have challenged the statutory beneficiary in an Arizona wrongful death case. But this is a Washington wrongful death case. Wouldn't we have to look to Washington law whether or not we would challenge that here or allow a challenge that here in the context of the wrongful death case?
No, Your Honor, because under full faith and credit, it's very clear, even in the One West case that was recently said, but as a general matter of principle for full faith and credit, you only give full faith and credit to the extent, you know, you only give the effect that the issuing state itself would have given. And whereas we're not trying to say...
But wouldn't, outside of a wrongful death case, Arizona would give full faith and credit to these Arizona documents, the acknowledgement of paternity and the birth certificate, right?
They would not give the effect that respondents want to give to it here. There's an example. It's not legal authority. There is a case called Gutierrez versus Gutierrez. It is not reported, so we're not citing it as legal authority.
Well, then you can't cite it, counsel.
Well, but I can discuss.
No.
May I discuss the facts?
No.
Okay. Well, the birth certificate itself, all Judge Downing did was, not all, he felt that he had to give full faith and credit to the birth certificate and to take it as truth, conclusive proof, of the statement that Deshaun was Tariah's father. And in fact, that is not the case, because a birth certificate does not necessarily get full faith and credit. It is prima facie evidence of the facts stated. But there are the numerous cases that we cited and discussed in our briefing that the respondents just said, oh, that's immigration. But the fact of the matter is a birth certificate is not a judgment of a court. It's not something that is, and there's been no judicial determination of anything.
But we have a statute that says the acknowledgement can be treated given the same effect as a superior court judgment in Arizona. We have the Washington Parentage Act, which says it should be recognized here as a valid order. And the only way you import the Arizona wrongful death law is if we have to use Arizona law on the wrongful death claim, and we don't have that choice of law problem.
Well, respectfully, I disagree, Your Honor, because the two tracks, there's Arizona and there's Washington. And in Arizona, a declaration of paternity is not recognized as any sort of conclusive determination. The Arizona court itself has said a paternity declaration is something completely different from who's entitled to sue for wrongful death damages. Then you come to Washington, and there's been this acknowledgement of paternity form signed, which was factually false, we do know by admission of the respondents themselves. what you have under the Washington Uniform Parentage Act, it says we'll give full faith and credit to determinations of paternity, essentially, that are appropriately entered in the other state. So even the Washington Uniform Parentage Act does not require full faith and credit for this declaration of paternity. So therefore, you know, you don't even get to also the all purposes. Washington law says determination of paternity is valid for all purposes. Arizona says no. Under our law, we aren't declaring paternity for the purpose of wrongful death cases. Therefore, that the simple full faith and credit, you actually have Washington giving greater effect to the declaration of paternity in Washington than would have been the case had the wrongful death action been pursued in Arizona. And that is an abuse of full faith and credit. Even Judge Downing thought this it was an interesting legal issue. He said, well, the only thing that's really pretty interesting is this child a beneficiary under 420.020 or not? And he expected that to be on appeal, which, of course, it is. I'll just very briefly go to the character evidence. We believe that when it comes to suitability for parenting, that lifestyle and character evidence is, in fact, admissible and should have been admissible. I'll dig into my response time, if I may, by
you
just
may.
1 minute. The exclusion of all of the evidence of the choices that Deshaun had made in his life about how he was going to live his life, how was he going to earn his money, were there going to be guns in his household, was he going to sell drugs, or was he going to go to community college and get a cook's degree and have a restaurant. He made his choices, and that information was kept from the jury. The wrongful death statute itself says that damages should be decided based on all of the evidence. Well, the jury did not have all of the evidence, and in fact, that contributed to the inflammatory remarks that we objected to in the rebuttal closing argument, saying there's no evidence that Deshaun blah, blah, blah. Well, the reason there was no evidence is that the trial judge excluded that evidence and the defense adhered to that ruling. Thank you. I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Leonard Feldman, and I'm counsel for the plaintiffs. Judge Trickey, just to quickly answer your question, Washington procedural statutes and procedural rules would continue to govern this case, and Arizona substantive rules and substantive decisions would govern the full faith and credit principles. And so, for example, in our brief, what we pointed out was Washington courts do, of course, have the authority under the statutes here to adjudicate parentage, but there are standing requirements that apply here as well as standing requirements in Arizona, and Munchbar has to satisfy all of those, and it hasn't satisfied any of them.
Well, if this wrongful death action had, if the events leading up to it had happened in Arizona and been filed in Arizona, then they would have had standing to raise this.
No, I don't think that's correct, and that raises the issue of what do we do with this Aranda decision,
yeah.
Because that's the only mechanism that they've articulated to get standing. What happened in Aranda was that the child died in utero. So there wasn't an acknowledgement of paternity, and there wasn't a birth certificate, and there wasn't an adjudication of paternity. So what the court did was held that it isn't necessary to have those things to establish parentage. And what's really significant about Aranda is the discussion of the public policies that animated the court's holding. First, it noted that under the wrongful death statutes, the purpose of Arizona's wrongful death statutes is to compensate the survivors and the victims. And second, although it wasn't directly germane to the court's holding, the court also discussed the policy underlying the parentage statutes, which is to make sure that the parents provide financial support and the child receives financial support. So the court held that it wasn't necessary to have a declaration of parentage. But one way to look at this is that if you don't have an acknowledgement of parentage, like in Aranda, then Aranda is controlling. But here we do. And that's a very different situation, and that's the Andrew R. decision. So what the court held in Andrew R. was you had a father that had acknowledged paternity even though he wasn't the biological father. And so if their fraud argument had any merit whatsoever, the court would have just held, as they're arguing here, well, hey, the father lied. This was perjury. He said he was the biological father, and he wasn't. But actually, the form doesn't say biological father anywhere in it. It says natural father. And so, as Judge Downing held here, even if they could establish standing under Arizona law or Washington law, which they can't, and even if they had timely brought this claim, which they didn't, there's no evidence of fraud. And the Andrew R. decision, like I mentioned, which involved a father that falsely stated that he was the biological father, or submitted, I should restate that, he submitted the acknowledgement of paternity form even though he wasn't the biological father, the court said, look, we have very strong and very profound interests in stability in family relationships, predictability in family relationships, all of the policies that Judge Downing recognized in his ruling here. We're not going to let individuals make these challenges even on fraud after 6 months. And that was a case in which it was the mother who was challenging paternity. So you have a case in Arizona, and this gets us to the full faith and credit issue. In Arizona, Tariah's mother could not challenge paternity, but an admitted tortfeasor can in Washington. I mean, there's something, obviously, that's seriously wrong about that. Washington, of course, has acted to address this issue, and this gets us into the issue about birth certificates, acknowledgments of paternity. I mean, birth certificates are different. We don't have an Arizona statute that says that a birth certificate has the force and effect of a judgment. We do have an Arizona statute that says that an acknowledgment of paternity has the force and effect of a judgment. We also don't have a Washington statute that says that an acknowledgement of paternity, or excuse me, that a birth certificate issued in another state will have full faith and credit. But we do have a Washington statute that says that an acknowledgement of paternity from another state will have full faith and credit.
So there are Washington cases that say that the statutory beneficiary is narrowly construed and they've disallowed claims in certain areas. So I'm not sure if that would be standing, but apparently tortfeasing defendants have the ability to challenge whether or not someone falls within the scope of this statute. How is that different than what they're trying to, how is that different than the standing issue you're raising?
Well, let me say two things. First, we're not asking this court to expand the list of statutory beneficiaries. Our argument has always been that Tariah is Deshaun's legal child. But to answer your question in terms of standing, it is true that a defendant can attempt to refute whether the plaintiff is a statutory beneficiary. So if we're talking about second-tier statutory beneficiaries, the defendant can argue that it's a parent who wasn't financially dependent on a child. But the argument they make has to be legally permissible. So while Munchbar had standing and the ability to argue that that Tariah was not a statutory beneficiary, they didn't have standing under Washington law, nor did they have standing under Arizona law, to make the argument that Tariah is not Deshaun's child, because both states limit the identity of the parties that are legally permitted to make that argument. And third-party tortfeasors are not in the list in either state. And, of course, there's no shortage of cases that so state under other states' parentage laws. And, of course, a defendant, even if the defendant had standing to make an argument, doesn't get to make an argument that's time-barred. So that's the second problem, is that even if we go down this road and we say that Munchbar, like a mother, for example, had the ability to argue that Tariah was not Deshaun's child, That argument was time-barred, and the law cuts that off, because what you see in all of the cases, and I mean literally all of the cases that we've cited, is this incredible focus on permanency and finality. And so when you're talking about a parent-child relationship, the law treats that differently. Only certain people get to make that argument, and the amount of time that they have to make it is very tight. And the reason for that is because there's all sorts of rights and privileges that turn on a parent-child relationship. It's not just the ability to bring a wrongful death action. It's the psychological benefit of knowing who your legal father is. It's the psychological benefit of knowing who your legal extended family, your grandmother, is. There are rights of succession and there are rights of inheritance that turn on this relationship, and there are government benefits that turn on this relationship. And so uniformly across the case law, we see this very strong emphasis on finality and permanency. And I think, Your Honors, what is probably most significant about this case is that Munchbar has not cited one single case anywhere in this country where the court set aside a birth certificate or an acknowledgement of paternity for the benefit of a tortfeasor in a wrongful death case. Let me, if I can, briefly address the issue of character evidence. As we pointed out in our briefing, Judge Downing's ruling didn't come out of thin air. It came out of the briefing that the parties had exchanged. And in response to the motion in limine that we filed on character evidence, Munchbar wrote, and this is at CP 206, Munchbar agrees that in a vacuum that Deshaun sold drugs, did not have a job, and had access to large amounts of cash should not be presented to the jury. The above evidence should only be excluded if the court prohibits the estate from presenting conflicting evidence of Deshaun's overall good character. And so when we got that brief, we said, we won't present any good character evidence. And we didn't present an economic claim. And so when Judge Downing issued his ruling, he was very clear that he was provisionally granting our motion in limine under Rule 403 grounds. And what he said is, as long as we didn't present role model evidence and as long as we didn't present an economic claim, that the evidence of lifestyle choices was going to be inadmissible because the probative value was significantly outweighed by the prejudice. And that's an abuse of discretion standard of review. And there's simply no way on that record that you could find that Judge Downing abused his discretion. We ask this court to affirm.
Thank you. We have several rebuttals to the arguments raised by respondents. And going first to the issue of standing to challenge paternity. Number one, we are not challenging paternity for the purposes of family law issues. We're talking about whether this child is a quote-unquote child within the meaning of the Washington statute. The Washington statute has to be narrowly construed as to who is qualified as a beneficiary. We use the dictionary definition, which uses male or female progenitor and or an adopted child. And I would like to point out that at CP 1712, the jury, one of the jurors, wrote a question. Did Deshaun legally adopt Tariah in Arizona? The jury knows, the jury had exactly the same idea of who is a child as the dictionary said. That question was never presented. The judge gave his instruction, but that was important. Respondents say that Munchbar had no standing to challenge paternity in Arizona. But the Hurt versus Superior Court case in Arizona, 124 Arizona 45, which is cited in the materials, talks about how is paternity established or challenged. And the court said the problem we face as to all three statutory methods of determining paternity is that the defendant in the wrongful death action would appear to have no standing to oppose the determination of the question. He would be an outsider. We believe that the defendant in a lawsuit may always question whether the plaintiff is a proper party if the issue is raised in a timely manner, which we did. So clearly we do have standing to raise this, and this attitude goes along with the Arizona attitude that a declaration of paternity may be binding as to for family law purposes, but it is not binding or conclusive as to wrongful death procedures. Mr. Feldman stated there was no evidence of fraud. Well, that is not correct either, and one of our objections is that Judge Downing, in ruling affirmatively that Taraya was a child as a matter of law, he interpreted evidence. He interpreted Denise Gilbert's testimony, oh, this is what the people at the state told us to do. We thought we couldn't adopt. Well, that isn't true, and certainly that's a matter of credibility, which cannot be determined against a non-moving party on summary judgment. So there's another problem there. The Andrew R. case only stands for the proposition that the parties who engaged in the acknowledgement of paternity are bound by that time limit, not that it's conclusive for other purposes. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes our hearing in this matter.